Coming up on BYU Football with Kalani Sitake, BYU is in bounce-back mode and heading to the Valley of the Sun for a Saturday showdown against Arizona State. With postseason positions in play, we'll be talking it up with Kalani and hooping it up with BYU men's basketball head coach Kevin Young next on BYU TV and ESPN+.
BYU Football with Kalani Sitake is presented by Intermountain Health, official medical provider of BYU Athletics.
All right. Hello, hello, hello. Hi, hi, hello. Yes. Yes, indeed. Hello and good evening once again, Cougar Nation. Thanks for joining us. It's our week 11 edition somehow of BYU Football with Kalani Sitake. We are live and on demand via the BYU TV and BYU radio apps and ESPN+. Coming up on tonight's show, we will look back at the Cougs' first setback of the season this past Saturday night at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. BYU defensive end Tyler Batty will join us from inside the film room. Deep Blue will tell the story of a special young BYU fan named True Hunt. BYU head men's basketball coach Kevin Young will be a part of tonight's show. We'll have Q&A for both Kalani and Coach Young and take a look back at the basketball season to this point. It's our combo show, so we'll have some hoops trivia for you as well later on in the program. Let's begin tonight's show by introducing to you the man who won his first game as BYU head coach in the state of Arizona. This week, he and the Cougars return to the Grand Canyon State. Please welcome back into Studio C, the head coach of your BYU Cougars, Kalani Sitake. Welcome back.
Good to be back. How you guys doing?
Good. It's a good group. It's our second to last time we're doing this year.
I know. I'm getting sad, man. I'm going to have to come and visit during basketball.
Please do.
Yeah.
Just hang out in the crowd.
Just come and just heckle KY a little bit.
<It'll take. laughs> Let's start with the breaking news. CFP rankings come out on Tuesdays. And BYU's 14th this week, down a bit from last week. But, you know, you're in the mix, as we say.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the final, so we still got some work to do, obviously, and especially after last week. But, just happy that I get to coach these guys, and we'll respond to it. It'll be fine. I think we're going to be in a really good mindset when we take the field this Saturday. I'm looking forward to the guys performing.
It's your first bounce-back opportunity of the season, and that's a challenge. It's great to be 9-0.
Yeah,
loss brings something to you.
Exactly. Difficult to lose a game. I mean, I don't think I ever wanted to lose ever again, you know, but now that it's here, we got to learn from it. Obviously, we know we didn't play our best. That's my job as head coach to get us there. But I like the way that the guys respond after the game in the locker room. I like their mindset when we got to work on Monday. Great practice, one of our best practices of the year today. So I think this is going to be really exciting for our guys to bounce back. And, you know, a lot will be said about our team, how we face adversity. These guys have been used to some of that and some doubters, and so it's a good place for us to be right now.
Interesting you said one of the best practices of the season today, because some of the vibe coming out of last week was maybe it was tough to kind of get back after the Utah win to where you were practicing at your best. What do you think about last week compared to this week?
Yeah, it's probably true. I mean, that I think it's hard when you're going throughout the whole year, and it's difficult to keep winning, you know, and that's why it's not an easy thing to do. And I mean, you look at even the Chiefs, that they lost the game. So that's part of it's we're all human. I think the goal of trying to stay humble and stay hungry, the guys have tried their best. And sometimes you go up against a team like Kansas that had their back against the wall. I mean, a lot wasn't going well for them from the year, you know, and then they were able to try to turn it around, and they have to win out to go to a bowl game. And so to beat Iowa State, that's a ranked team, and then beat us, that's ranked at our home. And now they're going to face Colorado, that's a ranked team. I mean, it doesn't get easier for them, but I know Lance Leipold and their team, and Jeff Grimes, AJ Stewart, they're on that staff, so they know us really well, on the Kansas staff. So it's going to be a tough matchup, but we didn't help ourselves with some of the mistakes that we made. But that's the game of football. I mean, that you have to be able to bounce back, and as difficult as the loss was, you got to learn from it. But you also got to praise some of the wonderful things that we saw in the game. And one of the best things that we saw is that our fans are awesome. You know, we had some really big-time, high-profile recruits that were there, and they enjoyed the entire game. Even though we lost, they said nothing but they sang the praises of our fans and how awesome it was to be part of that. I think it'll be helpful. It's just to have those recruits there and everyone just feeling the vibe of the stadium. It's super special. And you know, we got one more home game, but we got to take care of business going on the road this weekend.
Another thing we saw was that the Big 12 is a deep league, right? The 3-6 team beats two ranked teams in a row and plays well down the stretch. It is a really good football conference.
Yeah, and then they were one of the ones that was picked to be in the top. I can't remember how the preseason rankings went, but they're one of the favorite teams to possibly win the conference. And so a lot of it flipped upside down, and no one was really talking about Arizona State or BYU, but you know, at the beginning of the year, and now the game becomes really important. So there's a lot of parity in this league, and so anyone can beat anybody at any time, and you need to take care of your job, and everyone's got to do their best. And this was great evidence of it, that it'll be a great learning moment for us. And I don't want to do too much learning though that way. I'd rather learn different. You know, I'd rather learn our the best during the wins, but you have to take advantage of the opportunity to learn from this and give credit to where it's due with Kansas. And luckily we got another game coming up.
Now, like you said, you have the teams picked 13th and 16th back in the summer, playing in basically what comes down to like almost an elimination game for the conference championship. So it's big time.
Yeah, a lot of fun. That's what makes this conference awesome.
Well, it was BYU's first setback of the 2024 season. The Kansas Jayhawks leading Lavelle Edwards Stadium with a 17-13 win on Saturday. Let's take a look at some of the Cougs' top player performances from that game, though, presented by Waystar. And we're focusing on a BYU defense that held Kansas to its lowest offensive numbers of the season in multiple categories. We start with the D-line. Two of the top three tacklers were Tyler Batty and Blake Mangelson. They combined for two tackles for loss. John Nelson had a PBU and a hurry. Logan Lutui, a TFL. That was a good backfield that the BYU D-line helped keep in check.
Yeah, and I mean, they, like I said, the lowest output. These guys have been putting up a lot of yards, even though they weren't winning a lot of the games. The losses were really close losses to begin with, and we knew that they could put up points and they could get some yards. And so I think defense was able to do some good things offensively. We did some good things. We just didn't finish. We didn't finish the drives, and you know, you want to get points in drives and not turnovers, and you want to get touchdowns, not field goals. But we've been really good in the red zone except for the last two games, so we've got to get it figured out and fix it. And I don't care if they practice in the red zone the rest of the time. That's where we got to finish it, and that's how you get points on the scoreboard.
Let's stick with the BYU defense and head from front to back and take a look at linebacker from Saturday night. The trio of Glasker, Kelly, and Taggart combined for 15 stops, a TFL, and a pass breakup. And it's been so great to count on these guys as your starters pretty much game in, game out this season.
Yeah, they've been solid and just the way they work together. I mean, we have a very deep linebacking core, and to have these three lead the way, it's been nice. But we know we can count on other guys if they get tired or if we need them. But this is the way that they've been able to work and the way that they communicate and they've grasped the scheme. It's super special. They're all underclassmen, too. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, eligibility-wise, I was going to say, who comes back next year of these three?
Yeah, they all do.
That's amazing.
And I think, you know, looking at the entire group, we got a lot of guys coming back. And so we'll worry about that later. Right now, we got a season to finish still. But even with all that being said, and the good things that the defense did, there's some things that they know they can do better. That first drive was that's not our defense. And I like how they played the rest of the way, but we left some big plays out there that we could have made. And you know, there's room for improvement in every phase, in all three phases.
That first drive they had was their only full field touchdown drive of the night. They got that short 3-yard field after the funky quick kick situation. But other than that, defense was pretty locked down. Let's go to the DBs. We're hitting all three groups. Tied for the national lead in picks. As a team, BYU ranks third nationally in team pass efficiency defense. And yes, the DBs can tackle as well. Crew Wakely, who left the game a little later, had a strong game. The INTs grab a lot of attention, Coach. We'll see a Mori Bamba pass breakup here. Mark Collins we're going to see in a second with a beautiful pick, a toe tap. That's 17 picks for BYU on the year. You've had at least one interception in every game this year. Here's the Collins pick.
Yeah, I like that. It's just, different guys. I mean, you see Mark, that's his second pick that he's been able to get his toes in and make a big play. But when the play comes their way and they're able to make the interception, these guys capitalize on it. And we just need to keep that momentum going.
Some key stats from the game coming your way now, presented by Smarty, Kansas and BYU this past Saturday. And, the stats show that BYU did play an outstanding defensive game in particular. The yardage numbers you will certainly take. It all comes down to points, but Kansas was really challenged to do what they have been doing very well in the games leading up to BYU. The margin, turnover margin, ends up being a big again. You were minus one there, unfortunately.
Yeah, and just the overall just the feeling we knew we could have played better, but that you don't get a second chance in this, so you got to take it out on the next opponent. It happens to be Arizona State, and that's what we plan on doing.
All right, on an outstanding night for the BYU D, one of the Cougs' top defenders against KU was senior captain Tyler Batty. He led BYU in tackles and tackles for loss, added a pass breakup and a hurry. But tonight, he's in no hurry as he joins our Jerem Jordan inside the film room.
All right, Tyler, how have you internalized Saturday's game and what you have moving forward?
Yeah, good question. Saturday was tough. It's one of those things where we let one slip through our fingers, unfortunately. But we still have a lot of, we still got two games left in the season, and, a lot depends on those two games, so we're really looking forward.
Okay, let's talk about some of the plays in the game. There's a 3rd and 6 with Devin Neal, who, by the way, you guys slowed down like few have this year. He runs the ball for no gain, and you are right there.
So it's really nothing crazy. This is just kind of their lead zone with that tight end off the ball. Daniels is reading the backside defensive end. Anyways, things kind of get muddled up. We end up stopping him, and then just...
I counted about 20 yards where he gets pushed back here.
Well, you know.
And then what happened with you?
What a comment. They're being a little chippy, man. Hey, he's on the ground. Want to come in and push? Seeing if we can draw something there.
Have you taken a theater and media arts class to be able to play?
No, I have not. No? I have not. No? This is all just pure natural talent right there. That's just all. So if any agencies out there looking for actors, just keep me on your list.
Okay, and then in the second half, beginning of the fourth quarter, there's a big time sack on Jalen Daniels, who is hard to bring down. Yeah. They do not allow a lot of sacks.
And so we bring a little bit of a pressure here. I'm our contain rusher on that right side. So it's pretty much my job to keep the quarterback in the pocket. He ends up stepping up kind of into that A-B gap area where there was some open space and end up spinning back as he's scrambling, and me and Glasker Jack bring him down. So that was a fun play.
You said after the game, we didn't do enough because they scored.
Yeah.
And you guys played a great game defensively with 242 allowed, 17 points. Obviously, the punt takes an errant bounce almost twice, right? What is it that you guys feel like you can do even better, even though that game was pretty good?
One, just keeping them out of the red zone, right? Limiting yards, keeping them out of the red zone. When we get into those fourth downs, got to have stops, right? We got to have turnover on downs. We can't let them do something like that weird pooch punt. And if they do, we got to recover that ball, on those 3rd and longs. Also can't let them convert. And so there's a few different things, but it really comes down to not letting them move the ball down the field and get into any type of scoring position, whether that be a field goal or a touchdown.
Okay, Arizona State has a very capable quarterback in Sam Levitt. Cam Scataboo is like the juggernaut. That's what I've been calling him. Great receivers. What kind of urgency do you guys have knowing this is a very good opponent and a game that you probably need to make the Big 12 title game?
Yeah, no, it is a big game for us. And, so really we've got to kind of put the Kansas game to bed and get ready for Arizona State. They're, like you said, they're a really talented offense. They're a really talented team overall. And it's going to be a really fun game on the road.
Okay, thanks for the time. Best of luck in Tempe.
You bet. Appreciate it.
All right, last week it was the Kansas backfield with their big three, and this week a different kind of big three with Levitt, the quarterback, Scataboo, the running back, and Jordan Tyson, who's the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week at wide receiver.
Yeah, tons of talent and well-coached team. I think Kenny Dillingham does a great job at connecting with his players and motivating them, and obviously they've been able to turn around from last year to this year. What they've done has been amazing, and so I watching them play on all three phases, they're a well-coached team. They have a really good team, really good talent on their team, too, and he knows how to use it. So it's going to be a tough task for us, but I think our guys are excited about it. They're excited about the opportunity to play again and kind of get that bad taste that we have from this last weekend out of their mouths a little bit. And so we just want to get back and play. And the way that they took the field today, I'm encouraged to see the leadership of the team take over. It's going really well right now.
Coach Dillingham was talking about you and BYU yesterday when he said, I've faced Kalani multiple times, and so I had to do a little bit of research on that because you haven't played ASU. He saw you when he was an assistant at ASU back in the day. You were at both Utah and Oregon State as a DC. You saw him then when he was working with the offenses. And then at Oregon with Bo Nix, right? In 2022, he was the OC and QB coach there when BYU played at Eugene. So he knows you and knows your defenses, spoke so highly of you. But you've seen him in the past.
Yeah, and he's got a great offensive mind. I mean, I think he's young, but he knows. I mean,
he's 34.
He's got this great football IQ. He understands how to score points and put together a staff. He's had this approach of being a local kid from the Phoenix area and keeping the local talent there. And he's created this initiative to get that done. And they play with a lot of pride. I mean, I think it's a sellout crowd. And so he's got the energy going in that area. And I'm excited to go and play him. I mean, he's a great human being too. So this will be a fun game. Luckily we're not the ones playing, but the players are going to get it done on the field. And regardless of the result of the game, I'll still have a lot of respect and admiration for him because he's a great person.
He said the same of you.
And the way he coaches his guys, I mean, you could tell he loves his players. So you can't help but appreciate that and know that we're going to go against a quality team, but with great character on the team and great character in the coaching staff.
I do like his style, and it's kind of cool too. He's like an ASU fan kid growing up, and you're a BYU fan kid growing up.
Yeah, like, we're coaching the teams that we cheered for, and so it's kind of crazy, And, we'll have this interaction, this opportunity to talk before the game, and it's going to be one of those moments like, can you believe we're doing this? What I mean? So he knows exactly how I feel. I know how he feels, and when it's all said and done, it's going to be a lot of fun that we get to be here and get to coach these teams.
Let's get to know the foe a little bit. A few tidbits about the Arizona State Sun Devils, who come in at 8-2 on the year, 6-2 in the Big 12. BYU is, of course, 9-1, 6-1. The winner controls its Big 12 championship game fate, essentially. You see Cam Scataboo, and he's put up remarkable numbers, number 3 nationally in all-purpose yards, top 10 in rush yards per game as well. Cool matchup, Coach. They haven't lost a home game. You haven't lost in a road game yet.
Yeah, and I mean, they Cam Scataboo is a really good running back. That he's got a lot of speed, breaks tackles, tough. He can catch the ball too, so he's a tough matchup. And it seems like every week there's a great back in this conference, and he's actually one of the best backs in the country. So this will be a great matchup for us. But I like the way he plays the game. I like the grit and the toughness that he brings to the field. And I think it'll get the most out of our guys, so I'm looking forward to this.
Awesome challenge. As we go to break, this is your reminder that your day-to-day Cougar sports play-by-play happens on BYU Sports Nation. Join Spencer Linton and Jerem Jordan weekdays, noon Eastern, on BYU TV and BYU Radio. When we come back, Deep Blue will profile young BYU fan True Hunt. And men's hoops head coach Kevin Young will join us in studio when BYU football with Kalani Sitake continues. Stay with us.
BYU Football with Kalani Sitake is brought to you by Intermountain Health, official medical provider for BYU Athletics, Waystar, and Breeze, the official hometown airline of BYU Athletics, in partnership with the San Bernardino International Airport.
Welcome back to BYU Football with Kalani Sitake. Time now for our weekly Deep Blue profile. And this week, our story relates to a BYU football tradition. It comes from their practice field, essentially, and the team's tradition of honoring special fans with their True Blue Hero recognitions. And recently, a young BYU fan named True Hunt was one of those honorees. After a frightening turn of events amidst a family vacation, he and his family turned to prayer, faith, and service from others to help True pull through. This is Deep Blue with True Hunt.
It has always been my dream to take my kids to Hawaii, and the opportunity arose, and we were super excited about it. True started out the trip having the time of his life, playing in the ocean and sand with his brothers and sisters. He was so happy to be there, and I started to notice that he started slowing down and wasn't acting like himself. In my gut, I knew something wasn't right, but I just kept trying to fight it, thinking, we're on vacation, you know? He's gonna be okay. We don't wanna go to the ER on vacation. But ultimately, I knew something was off and I knew that we had to go in. So I dropped Brian, kids off, took our only car, leaving him carless, and drove myself and True to the hospital. And when we got there, they started assessing him, and I just told him, I said, I know his oxygen is okay, and it's an okay level, but there is something else going on with him. That's when they drew his blood and sent him in for x-rays and noticed that his heart levels, blood levels were through the roof. He was in terrible shape, and his x-rays showed his entire cavity full of fluid. The kid was a mess, and that's when we found out that his heart was only functioning at 20%. When the doctors came in after the results from the tests, they just looked at me and they're like, this is really serious. Your son's in heart failure. And we are taking him straight to the ICU. Immediately, my world around me just collapsed. So I called Brian and I said, you need to get here. Our son's in heart failure. And I don't know if he's gonna make it. And I'm really scared. But I had the car. And Brian was on the other side of the island with the kids, stuck in the middle of the night with no way to get to the hospital.
And so I remember Brian giving me a call. He goes, hey, Bishop, this is Brother Hunt. He says, well, we're the family that's been coming to your ward for the past 2 weeks. I got out of the car with my two girls, and there's this long dirt road, and I can remember the look on Brian's face. You know, like any other father, a loving father, you could see he was anxious. He was so anxious to get to his son.
He took me to the hospital. He actually gave me a big hug. He was the first person that I saw.
When he hugged me, he said that he had felt like it was the Savior picking him up. You know, I don't really view myself like that. I'm grateful that the Lord could use me at that time to lift somebody up and embrace him and help him feel comfortable and help him know that it was going to be okay.
Because I felt so alone and isolated in that hospital room, I immediately reached out to social media. I posted on my Instagram and I said, anyone out there, please pray for him. Because I need help. He needs help. And it was amazing to me to see how quickly a community came together in one purpose to pray for my kid. People I'd never met, people from all over the world started praying for True. And over the next few days, we really felt those prayers. We felt like the strength was just exponential.
So once I got to the hospital, the next day or so was True's kind of hardest time in the hospital, where his heart function started to shut down more and more.
I remember falling asleep at his bedside, holding his hand, and probably closed my eyes for what felt like 3 minutes, only to be woken up by a rush of doctors and nurses coming into his room. And being pushed aside and telling, they told me I needed to step out of the room because his heart and lungs were filling up with fluid and he was no longer able to breathe on his own. The doctor just said to us, he said, what I'm about to do, I'm about to intubate your boy, but with a heart as sick as his, it doesn't always go well. But this is our last chance to save him and we're gonna have to do it and try. And I looked at Brian and I said, this is it. And he looked at me and he said, we're gonna be okay. Whether that means that he's gonna make it or not, we're gonna be okay. We just prayed together in that hallway. Just, it's all we could do.
It reminded me of that scripture where it says, be still and know that I'm God. It was just the most still, quiet moment you could imagine. You feel so helpless, like a little speck in this world, And you know that God is real, like, because it just, in that moment, his life hung in the balance, and there was a decision point as to, like, should we let him stay with his family, or should we bring him home to our family in heaven? And we were just blessed that he let him stay with us.
We here at Lifelight, we were called to pick up True. They are working on stabilizing him in Hawaii for several days. The biggest reason he was being transported, he might need mechanical support. So it would be a much higher level of care than they can provide in Hawaii, but we can provide it pretty easily here. We loaded the family, we took off, and probably within an hour, for me as one of the providers, it was very reassuring to see the parents fall asleep because they were so exhausted from all this. They were so reassured that he was heading home that they were able to sleep for the first time in several days.
Once they took him off the ventilator, he wasn't immediately himself. Like, he was basically just
a shell of a person.
Yeah, just kind of, he wasn't really there. Like, you could tell it wasn't him.
And that was really scary. But again, through some miracle, one day he wakes up and he looks at me and he smiled at me, and he'd never done that before. And it was just, I knew he was in there. Word got out that True was a huge BYU fan, and before we knew it, I got a phone call saying that there was a team of linebackers coming to visit True in the hospital. He was so excited. And then after that, we got another phone call saying that True was invited to come meet the entire team. It was the best phone call that we've ever received. It was surreal to look at him and just think that he had been fighting for his life just weeks before this, and now here he is surrounded by his favorite people in the world, the BYU football players. I just was so grateful in that moment. Now True is back to the boy that we knew before. He still is having to do checkups with the heart team and still on the process of recovery. It definitely has changed our perspective. It just makes you aware that there's so much going on around us. Everyone around us has a story.
You feel like you can do better to help them. You feel like you can be an angel in their lives, just like we had angels in our lives. So
we have so many angels in our lives.
We are all brothers and sisters of a loving Heavenly Father. And we should act that way. We should treat everyone that way.
When you think something is hopeless, it's not always the way it appears. Sometimes hope is the best thing we have at the time.
True story. It helps me understand, like, how important each one of us is.
And that True is really loved.
He's obviously got something in store for his life, and he's needed here. One of the things that I felt like I could do at least was just share a testimony, just share a witness of this miracle. That sometimes they do happen, that God really does still live, that Jesus is real, that he can heal people the same way that he healed people when he was here.
Well, he does put the True in True Blue Hero, the program you have that helped to honor him and his family. Those are special moments.
Yeah, I love being a part of that and having that. You know, Bronco Mendenhall is the one that brought it to the program, and I'm glad that we were able to keep the tradition alive. And just being able to meet, I mean, you guys know how I feel about our fans, but being able to meet their family and True and his family. And I just thank you to everyone that can help and pray for them. And it's amazing we have these True Blue Heroes that are with us, and a lot of them that aren't anymore, and I can feel their presence when we're playing our games. It's pretty cool. So glad that True is with us, but thank you for everyone that are True Blue Heroes that are out there and that are still here, and that those that are past, our players. It's really cool. Every day we pray for team meeting, and you can always count on them praying for the True Blue Heroes and their families, and so it's a remarkable thing to be a part of, and thank you very much, guys.
It's a wonderful program. Thank you. Well, 7 months ago this week, BYU men's basketball introduced a new head coach who was until that time on the path to a head coaching job in the NBA. But Kevin Young chose the BYU fork in the road, and Cougar Nation is very glad that he did. Tonight, we welcome him into Studio C for the first time, the first of many times, as this will be the home for his weekly show in a couple of weeks. bring him on out. BYU men's basketball head coach, Kevin Young.
Thank you, man.
Now you're official.
There we go.
Now you're official.
There we go.
I love it. I love having you guys in the same room. All right. I want to ask you both a question. When did you guys first get in touch with each other as BYU colleagues?
Well, once I knew that he was going to be our basketball coach, I knew ahead before some of the others. And I told Brian Santiago and Tom Holm I need his number because I knew of him and his reputation, what he was doing in the NBA and what he's done as a coach. And so... wanted to fix my jumper a little bit, see if he can help me out. But more than anything, just wanted to like wish him the best and welcome him to the family. And I think everybody else kind of did the rest. But I just want him to know that I'm a big BYU basketball fan, and and looking forward to seeing him do his thing. And he's done a great job. And we've been able to share notes and talk in our coaches' meetings, and text quite a bit back and forth. And he's a huge help to me in my job. It's been a lot of fun doing that.
Take us back to your first interaction then.
Yeah, I mean, I think, initially right out of the gate, coach reached out. But for me, I was about a week on the job, and I remember I just cold called him, and I was just, man, how do you do this? And he was gracious enough, gave me about an hour of his time, and literally I just called him out of the blue. I know he was getting ready for his season. So, for me, that was just kind of let me know where he stood and for him to spend that kind of time with me and just picking his brain, just putting the staff together. How do you move around town, different things like that. So I think just the mutual respect was kind of there right out of the gate.
What's the best thing that a basketball coach can learn from a football coach and vice versa? Because you occupy, pretty high-profile positions here at the university. Yeah.
I mean, for me, I'm always fascinated with how football coaches manage their staff. So much bigger than a basketball staff. When I was in the NBA, Brett Brown, who I worked for with the 76ers, he kind of ran his staff in the football model. Him and Chip Kelly were close friends when he was at the Eagles. And so we did a lot of stuff that they did. And I'm always just fascinated about how they run meetings, how they deliver information. How does he get information from the coaches and how does that get to the players? And so I'm really fascinated just with their processes.
Well, then for me, I'm always into the culture of the game. And so you study... I mean, I grew up in the days when Pat Riley had his hair slicked back and everybody had their different style of things. But I read a book that it's called The Culture Code, and it highlighted Popovich and what he did as a coach. And it was nothing about basketball. It was more about organization, relationships, and how to get all the different personalities and egos to work together and pull in the right direction. And so he saw this common ground where everybody that's in basketball, you don't have a lot of time and it's a loud arena. People can hear what you say. Not a lot of people can hear what I say on the field. So it's a little bit more high profile and a little bit more spotlight on it. And just being able to talk to guys that have been in the NBA is a different deal, but seeing the crossover and seeing what KY is doing here, man, it's been a lot of fun being to see him kind of implement it into BYU and here in Provo. And you can feel the energy from it.
You've been a basketball guy forever, but you love football.
I do love football. Me and you talk fantasy trades all the time. So, I love football. I love the game. I got two young boys that love playing as well. I'm one of five. I'm one of six kids, five boys. We were playing football in the backyard all the time. So, huge football guy. Love follow. Love what these guys are doing. It's been unbelievably fun to follow their season. They're absolutely killing it. And so, I'm a huge fan. I try to go to every game that I can and watch the away game. So can't wait to see what they continue to do.
As we do your show through the season, we'll learn more about your career path, obviously, and the stops you've had. But right before the break, how do you describe the path you took to get to Provo?
Long, windy road, man, for sure. And I think most coaches' roads are pretty windy. I don't think I learned that a long time ago. There's very few straight paths. It's a right turn here, a long left turn over there, a hill you got to climb and then go down and so forth. And so, for me, I just try to learn as much as I could kind of along the way. But this is where I was meant to be, and my family's excited to be here and just really just feel blessed for, the opportunity.
We are so glad you are here. Let's take a break. Coming up next, we'll have some Q&A from the audience for both of our coaches when BYU football with Kalani Sitake and BYU basketball with Kevin Young continue. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It is our special annual combination coaches show, our collab with Kalani and Kevin Young. The kids say it. Let's head to our studio audience. We have a weekly Q&A segment presented by Ken Garf. We hear you. We have four questions from the audience. These people are now at our studio mic. And Brenton is first up with baggage. Brenton, go ahead.
Yeah, this question actually is from Abigail. She's just really shy.
Okay.
But for both coaches, what is the number one recruiting pitch that you both take out to the recruits that you could only use from Provo, Utah at BYU?
You're the seasoned vet, man. I'm going to let you.
My number one pitch is they just got to get on campus, and they got to be in a setting, whether it's whatever sport it is, and be around the fans. And so that's going to be the key. And I know KY's had recruits at our games and stuff like that, but once they feel the energy from the fans and the vibe, there's nothing like it ever. Anywhere else, and I've been around a lot of different places. I know you have, but the energy and the belief, the feeling the fans give is awesome, second to none.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely echo that. I think on top of that, you know, one thing that we found traction with is just, you know, a lot of the high-level recruits that we're talking to, they like that they can come here and focus solely on what they're here to do, which is play basketball and go to school and not have to worry about a lot of other, you know, nonsense that goes on in between. What Coach just said, and that it's been a pretty good duo for us.
Coach Satake, I was at a meeting this morning, and they were talking about this past weekend's game. The outcome wasn't what maybe the guys who were there wanted to see necessarily, but the recruits who were there, they had their friends telling them, I don't care what just happened in the game. This is the place you need to be. There was a different feeling at a football game about this place. I think that's what you're talking about a little bit.
Yeah, it's not a conditional thing. I mean, our fans will be there, win or lose. And they'll support us. And the other thing that they heard is a lot of the good things that were being said from the fans to our players, even though that game didn't go our way. And that impressed our recruits. And it impressed, I mean, the things that our opponents say about visiting Provo is something that the recruits lean on. They're like, man, I think this is a really good fan base and good people. And they want to be around that. And like KY said, the distractions, it's only positive things here. It's if you want to play in the league, whether it's the NFL or NBA, this is the right place to go to. If you avoid all the distractions and you only live the great part of the sport and the academics.
All right, our next question. Yes, what's your name?
Clara.
Hi, Clara. What's your question?
How would you feel about having a girl football player on the team?
A girl football player? Let's go. Can you throw the ball? Yes. You get a good throw, you can kick, you can do it. I mean, I have daughters that they did the football camp when I was at a different place and it was padded. And I had to tell my daughters to slow down because they were kind of hurting the guys. So the girls can do it too.
Thanks, Claire. Next question, sir.
Okay, I'm Paul Miller, and this is for Coach Young. You've talked about your transition from the NBA to the NCAA, and a lot I've heard you talk about how different it is to have such a long practice season prior to the real season. What adjustments have you made to deal with the longer practice season period? And how does your practice strategy differ from the other coaches in the NCAA?
Yeah, I think something that's really helped me is just our sports science group, you know, making sure that we're not overdoing it with our players. You know, you guys would be amazed at the, and I know you guys do it too, but you'd be amazed at the amount of technology that we're offered to give us the different metrics of how much load is getting put for these guys' bodies and so forth. So we actually have a pretty scientific way of going about planning our practices that I think would separate us from a lot of other schools in the college ranks. So we did it some in the NBA, but not nearly as important because you don't practice nearly as much. But I think that's helped me manage it. You know, relying on my staff who have coached in college before and just kind of picking their brain on how best to use this practice time so I don't lose my mind has been helpful.
And the big difference, I mean, in the NBA, you're playing 82 plus the exhibition plus the postseason. There's almost no time to practice, whereas in college, a lot of your time is practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest difference is the way I describe it is in the NBA, you really coach through the games, the film, and the walkthroughs. That's how you coach in the pros. In college, you coach through practice, right? And so it's a different way of doing it, but it's fun. I've enjoyed the competition, right? You don't get that internal competition really in the NBA nearly as much. And so, you know, we've got unbelievable guys that go extremely hard every day. And so
It's been fun from that standpoint.
All right, we have one time for one final question, sir.
Awesome. Name's Brian Field. The question's for Coach Young. What kind of a threat are you seeing with your team this year within the Big 12?
I mean, it's an unbelievable league. You know, you look at however many teams are in the top 10, the top 25. We're going to be tested every night, you know. And part of the thing for me that makes me uneasy is just the uncertainty and the lack of knowledge as it relates to the league intimately, right? I could go down the list of every team in the NBA and tell you their style of play, their coaching strengths, their best players' tendencies and so forth. And trying to grow my own personal knowledge base of that relative to the Big 12 is something that I spend a lot of time doing. But the one thing I could say is I really like our group. You know, I think we have a good blend of young guys who are extremely talented, a great blend of guys that are coming back who know the league, who I've really tried to rely on. You know, guys like Richie and Dallin and Foose and Trey and Trevin and Dawson that have been here. So that's where I find some comfort in knowing the league. But it's going to be a tough task. There's no question about it, but I know our guys are up to it.
Thank you all for the questions. Appreciate it. Thank you. Good job. Next week at this time, Coach Young and the Cougs are going to be in San Diego getting ready for their Thanksgiving tournament. But we will have you back here in Studio C. It's your season finale already of your show next Tuesday night. But for tonight, we're going to let Kalani go and let Coach Young take us to the finish line. Kalani, closing thought from you as you get ready to head down to the Valley of the Sun.
No, just really excited. I can't believe that the time flew by like that. And excited for our overall just BYU sports and the athletic department. Happy that we have KY with us, coaching basketball team, and glad that we have it's just not just us two, but we have a good connection with all the coaches. We share notes, and it's a great place to be. I'm a better person because I get to work here and be around amazing fans and amazing employees that work here. So looking forward to it. You guys power us through if you can show up. I know ASU is trying to protect their tickets, but take them anyways, guys. Let's show up there and let's have some fun in Arizona, in the desert.
I love it. When we come back, we will have a Hoops early season recap with Coach Young and our weekly trivia question as well. That's when our special combination coaches show returns. Kalani, thank you. Good luck. We'll be back with Coach Young in a minute. Stay with us.
BYU Football with Kalani Sitake is brought to you by Intermountain Health, official medical provider for BYU Athletics, Smarty, Address Data Wizards, and Ken Garf. We hear you.
Yes, it is a football show with basketball highlights because it's our combo show. Welcome back to Studio C and our special combo show for the year. While the BYU football team was getting out to a 9-0 start to the season, the BYU men's Hoopsters were winning their first four games. The Cougs look to go 5-0 this Saturday night home to Mississippi Valley while football's down in the Valley of the Sun taking on ASU. Let's take a quick look back at the first four games with Coach Kevin Young at the helm. This season opened with the Cougs taking on the Bears of Central Arkansas, and this was the debut of Yegor Demian. And Yegor ended up, just with a simple double-double in his first game as a Coug, 18-11, four steals. What a great opener for the kid from Russia.
Yeah, I mean, he got off to a good start that night, kind of being aggressive early, scoring, which he hadn't done as much, you know, so it was good to see him kind of being aggressive, looking to punish some of their unders in pick and roll. And, you know, his size has been a deadly combination with his passing, with that 11 assist he put up that night as well.
17 points for Cannon catching, 6-10 for Kaba, 16-8 points and rebounds for Richie. BYU won that first game 95-71. Good to get the first one in and under the belt.
Yeah, no question. It was, trying to learn as much as we could playing against ourselves. It was nice to play against somebody else and just put some of that stuff into action. I thought there was a lot to learn from that game and, happy that some of those young guys played well in that first one.
Good team out of the Big West came in game two, UC Riverside. This time it was Kaba Keita's turn for a double-double. He had 14 points and 10 rebounds. And Foose also had a nice game inside 13-6. Riverside did give you a good run in this game.
They did. You know, they're really well coached, was really impressed with, their level of organization on both ends of the floor. Did some stuff late that kind of made it difficult for us. But, you know, Kaba is an unbelievable athlete. I think he's one of the best athletes in the country. I thought it showed in that game. It was good to kind of have to make it a bit closer than we wanted, just to learn how to, you know, situationally deal with some things, and happy that we were able to get it done.
And more from Yegor. He ended up having 27-5 in his second game. His results from week one, games one and two, earned him the Big 12 Co-Newcomer of the Week award. BYU win this game 86-80. And again, it was a game you had to deal with some adversity down the stretch. Good to win a game that way.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was. We missed some free throws, you know, that could have given us a wider margin there. But I think it was good to see Yegor. That, like, Riverside was more athletic than Central Arkansas. So seeing him doing it against more athletic guys that were a little more Big 12 kind of esque, if you will, was good. I think it was good for him. Good for kind of the fans, I think, to see him in that environment as well. So he's obviously a unique talent, and he deserves all the recognition he's getting here early.
Game three was an interesting game because Queens came in on a back-to-back, but a true back-to-back, like an NBA back-to-back. Mm-hmm. They were playing in Salt Lake City one night and played you the next night. And this was Dawson Baker's breakout game. We saw what he could do at UC Irvine. Not a lot from him last year as he was injured, but a 22-point night for Dawson. And so efficient, 8 for 10 from the field, coach, 6 for 7 from deep.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who was really thought of highly when he came here, and then, like you mentioned, was kind of out with injury most of last year. But, you know, he's done it in practice. We were waiting for a game like that from him with the lights on. He's a guy who can really put the ball in the basket. I think we've worked with his efficiency, and he was really good in that game.
Another good night for Kaba. Another double-double for Kata. He ends up with 11-13 on the night. He wasn't the only guy doing it. It was a lot of people. Yegor had another solid night. In fact, 14-5-3 for Yegor. He was another co-Big 12 Newcomer of the Week award winner for a second straight week. BYU in this game, the Queens game, won 99-55 to go 3-0. And the great thing we're seeing so far, coach, is just how on any given night a different guy can take a lead for you.
And that's something we've talked to our guys about. You know, since I got here, I mean, one of our kind of marquee tenets is just being unselfish. We talk about it all the time. We want to move that ball around, and certain nights it's going to be different guys. And so far, it's been that way. I think it's a sign of a really good team when you can get multiple guys being your leading scorer.
Let's take a look at one last game. The game four was against Idaho. And in this one, Foose and Richie kind of stole the show. Fuseni Traore, 29 points, career high, 11 for 12 from the field, 9 rebounds, played only 23 minutes. How about this? First player since Lee Kamard 16 years ago to shoot 90% or 92% or better on 10-plus field goal attempts. And going back at least 15 years, he's the only BYU player with a 29-9 in 23 or fewer minutes of play.
All I heard there was that Lee played here 16 years ago. I coached Lee in the pros, and I can't believe that was that long ago. But now Foose was unbelievable, man. The efficiency, and, you know, they played him one-on-one. He made him pay.
And then Richie, over the last 15 seasons, he's the only BYU player with a game of 15 more points, 3-plus rebounds, 3-plus assists, 3-plus blocks, and 3-plus steals. On the night, you see his line there, a 26-4-4-3-4. That's like an NBA-style box score.
No question. I mean, I know that, you know, some of our younger guys are talked a lot about with NBA aspirations. I mean, Richie's right there. I tell every scout that comes through that I think he's an NBA player. You know, he just fills up a stat sheet. He just plays with an unbelievable motor. And the thing I love about him is most guys that play that way can't shoot. That most guys have to get on the court just playing hard. He plays hard and is a really, really good shooter too. So he's really unique from that standpoint, and just love what he brings.
That is the four-game recap of getting to 4-0. Coming up next, it is Mississippi Valley on Saturday night at the Marriott Center. 7 o'clock tip. The Cougs lead the all-time series 3-0. You see Cougs and Delta Devils. That'll be at the Marriott Center on Saturday night. As we take a break, here's this week's trivia question presented by Breeze, the official hometown airline of BYU Athletics. And we're switching gears from football to hoops for this one. What is the BYU men's basketball record for most consecutive wins to open a season? Right now, it's 4-0 and counting. The answer is coming up next. Stick around. Welcome back. BYU basketball with Kevin Young on this football night. There's our basketball trivia question presented by Breeze. And the answer to this one is 17. BYU opened 17-0 back in 1987-88. This Saturday, our broadcast schedule for BYU and Mississippi State. The game will be at 7 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, and we'll not have a TV show countdown. We will have a basketball radio pregame show, however, at 6 o'clock Eastern, and then for radio only on the postgame show for that one, BYU and Mississippi Valley. Coach, Good luck to get to 5-0 this week, and then we're off to San Diego. Great having you here tonight. We'll do it many more times throughout the winter.
No, I appreciate it. This was great. It's cool to do it with Kalani, and you know, looking forward to kicking him out here and getting our show rolling.
All right. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Go Cougs. Have a great week.